Okay. It's 7 p.m. according to my... Now I lost it all.
Good evening. Are we ready? I'd like to thank all of you for attending tonight. It's quiet out there. Welcome to the Community Center Services District Board Meeting, January 8th. Before we get started, let's have a roll call.
President Simon?
Here.
Vice President Graves?
Here.
Director Pease?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Director Wiesen?
Here.
I meant to say, let's have the Pledge of Allegiance first, but I did it back.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, buddy. Okay. Public comments. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that item is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. Is there any public comment? I will close public comment. Thank you. We now go into board officers appointment and district representative committee positions. I'd like to split that in half, Rick, because we have presentations from our area agencies, and rather than make them sit here while we go through all of the board positions. So let's have the election, so we can open for nominations, and then at that point we can forego the committees until we have presentations. So at this time, I would like to open up nominations for...
I nominate Mark Simon, President.
Thank you. Take to the vote.
Should we, that's all the nominations?
Just one at a time?
No.
No, you'll actually take all the nominations.
Oh, you do?
Yep, and then I'll take public comment. So if there's any public comment on this particular issue, you can take public comment now, or you can take public comment after the nominations. And once all the nominations are had, you'll obviously close public comment, bring it back for any further discussion before there's a motion made, and then you'll take a motion to make the appointment.
Okay. I never did public comment before. I had no idea we did that. I've never done it. Are there any other nominations for the board for president? Is there any public comment? If there's no public comment, then I'll take this to a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We have three ayes.
I didn't get it. I caught two.
Three.
One, two, three.
Three. Thank you.
Are there two abstentions? Is that no recording yet?
Two abstentions. Yes. At this time, we need nominations for vice president.
Nominate myself.
I nominate Kevin Graves.
Any further nominations?
I'm going to be vice president.
Are you nominating yourself?
Yeah, I nominate myself.
We have three nominations for vice president. And now at this point, we go to public comment?
You can.
Okay. Is there any public comment? There is not. Now, how do we do the vote for this?
Close public comment. You can do it one of two ways. Somebody can just make a motion to make that appointment to vice president. Sorry, I keep forgetting I gotta do this. You can make a motion to make the appointment, see if there's a second. If there's a second, then you'll take a vote on that. If there's not a second, then it'll die for lack of a second, then you'll go to the next person. Wait for the next motion. So you can do it in order, or you can just ask for the motion.
Okay.
Your preference.
We'll start on the side. So I need a motion for...
Right now you have three nominations. So what I would say, is there any further discussion on these three nominations?
Is there any... There was not when I asked for...
There was no further discussion amongst the board members. So you've cut closed public
comments. I did not ask the board. Is there any discussion amongst the board? There is none. Okay.
So now you can take one at a time, or you can see if somebody wants to make a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I make a motion to appoint Kevin Graves, since this is his final year before the elections again, so I would like to see him
And
retained as vice president.
And this will require a second?
Yes, it does.
Do I have a second?
Dies for lack of a second. Somebody else want to make a motion?
I'll move. I be vice president.
Do I have a second? I do not.
That's for lack of a second.
All right.
Anybody else want to make a motion?
I need another motion. At this point?
I'll make a motion.
Right. Go ahead.
I'll make a motion for myself to be vice president.
And I'm
I'll second.
All right, so at this point, there is no public comment. Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It is 1, 2, 3, 4.
One abstention.
Okay. This gives us President Pro Tem. That's what we need.
President Pro Tem, yes.
Okay.
I'll nominate myself for President Pro Tem.
Okay. Any other nominations?
I'm going to nominate Kevin Graves for President Pro Tem.
Okay. Any other nominations? Any public comment? Okay. Can I get a motion?
I make a motion again for Kevin Graves.
Can I get a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
That passes.
I have three.
Okay. We're done with it. Okay.
We have, just for the recording on the vote, can we make sure that we've got that right? Do we get four?
No. Three. I'll abstain from that vote also.
Three. One abstention.
Abstain.
Two abstentions.
Two abstentions. Okay. Okay.
Secretary, have that?
Yes.
We're pretty quick through it, so we'll make sure we've got it. And I'm not sure that I wrote it down perfectly, so.
Okay.
I need a picture of these two guys. You got time, President?
Yeah.
Okay. Appreciate it. I didn't leave you.
You're right. Let me get out of the way.
You're fine. Okay. You miss. No flash. There you go. Sorry about that.
Well,
drop the darn thing. You want to stand by the flag? Or you want to stand by the flag?
Okay.
I'd rather stand by the flag.
He took the straight walk away.
Let's stand by the flag. That's better.
Yeah, let's do that.
Can you do the report? Try it again. And then get you a wooden glass.
Move the flag in the chair.
Oh, yeah. Just throw it.
That's all right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Now, excuse me. Okay, before we get into the committees, let's move into area agency reports. I know we have the Sheriff's Department here. I'm not sure who's representing the Sheriff's Department yet, whether it's Lieutenant Beltran or
Officer Shepard.
How's everybody doing today?
Good, how are you?
You guys had good, safe holidays. We passed all our stats. So first, just want to bring up what I consider really good news is residential burglaries was down to 1 this month.
That's so great.
Ultimately, we'd love to see 0. We did notice a slight increase in auto burglaries, which we slightly suspected would happen. 2 out of the 3 that we did see was people just forgot to lock their vehicles. So stuff that, you know, we got to make sure we do our best to prevent making the lives easy for the criminals. So always remember to lock your vehicles up, even for short trips into the house. Another thing I want to talk about is identity thefts and credit card fraud. I'm sure you all heard in the news what happened with, you know, Target and their systems getting infiltrated, stealing a bunch of Chase bank accounts. So, you know, with all the spending going on in the holiday times, it's always a good idea to go back and make sure all those expenditures on your accounts is truly something you purchased. We do have a pamphlet that Tony provided us with. If anyone would like, we got a stack of them in the back. And it kind of just goes through, if you've been the victim of one, the routes to take, and also the kind of definitions, because there's some confusion as far as identity theft versus just credit card fraud. So if anyone would like that, we have those in the back. We did see a slight increase too with vandalisms, with kids being out of school, and that's something we're not too surprised about. And hopefully everyone's heard that our school resource officer, Deputy Lane, was extended. So he'll be here for, from what I understand, at least the remainder of the school year. So that'd be a really big help as far as keeping all the kids under control. Does anyone have any questions regarding our stats that passed out?
Yeah, pretty mild.
That's good.
So like I said, we did see a lot of credit card fraud and identity theft, which is again why I wanted to kind of bring it up.
Looks like it was too cold for the little thugs to go out this month, so they stayed in the house.
Yeah, and also, with people being home for the holidays, lots of folks take the week off, so most criminals know it's not the best month to be going around. But again, with people going back to work, keep in mind that we like to see those suspicious activity reports go up, because when people are back to work, the criminals are obviously not going to work. They're going to your neighborhood, so anything suspicious, please contact us.
Excellent. Is there any help?
I just have a quick question. I know that there's been some changeover in the department on your field staff. Mark, I think, has been reassigned or is about to move on. Is it you and John Rock and primarily in Discovery Bay right now?
So as far as the resident deputies, it's still John Rock and myself, and then obviously Deputy Lane for the schools. So that hasn't changed, and that'll continue for at least the next 6 months.
Any public comment? Any questions from the board?
Yeah, I just have a question just for my information, so when I get asked the question, I know you don't like to give out the hours that you guys are here because that's different, but to the best of my knowledge, we don't have 24-hour resident protection because there's only two of you, correct?
There's always a deputy assigned to, this area falls into what we consider Beat 32.
Right.
So there's always a deputy assigned. It just isn't just exclusively Discovery Bay. It'll include Byron and some of the outlying areas. So there's always somebody here.
Sure.
But for the most part, you have, including me, Deputy Rock, and Deputy Lane, about 120 hours a week. So it's not 24, but for the most part, from 6 a.m. to midnight, Monday through Thursday, and then I think it's from about 12 to 2 in the morning on the weekend. So for the most part, we do have someone out here, and when one of us is in here, there's still a deputy going to be in the area.
All right. If I know that you can't make any comments, I know we have a lieutenant to join us. In a optimum type of situation, would one or two more resident officers out here allow us to have 24 protection from a resident?
As far as dispersing them, obviously for my point of view, I would love to have a second car out here when I'm not here, because seeing as our job can be extremely dangerous doing car stops, it's nice to know we have somebody nearby to help us out.
Right.
And it might just depend on our stats, when we're getting hit, if there's certain times that we could, use our resources too. It may not be good to have someone out here if they're not really necessary.
Sure.
It could be better to have two people out here during that time where we're experiencing high crime volume versus just 24/7. So definitely more would always be awesome.
Sure.
I don't know that 24/7 would be the ideal solution, but.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like to take a moment, too. We have a new lieutenant out here, Lieutenant Beltran. He's replacing Lieutenant Johnson, who's got reassigned.
Welcome.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jose Beltran. I've been with the Office of the Sheriff for 14 years. A little bit about myself. I've been assigned to patrol. I was the Town of Rodeo resident deputy, so I know what it is like to be a resident deputy in a community. I've had assignments and investigations, undercover and narcotics. Upon getting promoted to sergeant, I was assigned to the homicide unit, so I supervised that unit, and I was promoted to lieutenant, and here I am. What I'm looking forward to is continuing the foundation and partnership with the community of Discovery Bay, and hopefully in conjunction we can continue to make this community a safe place to live. So it's going to take me some time to get adjusted. I'm still getting a lot of pass down from Lieutenant Johnson. He has not moved far to his new assignment, so he's within a phone call, within reach. And so anytime anybody has any questions, please give us a call, and hopefully we can find a solution to what you're looking for.
We've had a great relationship with the Sheriff's Department for several years, and welcome. We're looking forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
Have you met Marine Patrol? Any of those guys?
Marine Patrol? I know. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Any questions, Lieutenant? You have a question? Please
come up to the podium.
Come up to the podium if you're going to come up. Please. Thank you. He has a question for you.
Oh, that's okay, guys. Thank you very much. I'm Brian Enbaum. I'm a resident here. Just out of curiosity, there's only one deputy being on duty, and you've got to stop, and you know it's a dangerous stop. Who do you get to back you up? Highway Patrol, Brentwood, can you call help for backing you up if you have a stop and you run the plate and you know it's a dangerous stop?
Well, hopefully the other beat car will be listening, or there will be available to assist. Given the wide geographical location of our area out here, that other beat car, it could be as far as out as unincorporated Antioch. However, in those cases, we have a great partnership with Brentwood, with CHP, that can assist us.
So you could ask for their help?
We could, yes.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you.
We do not have, let's see, no CHP, no fire protection, no Supervisor PFO's office. We will move back to the committee positions. C, item two. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is an item that comes before you occasionally, generally once a year, but sometimes it comes due more often than that, depending on the board's makeup. So right now there are a number of committee appointments that the president can choose to make between the board members and on a variety of different regional committee appointments, if you will, as well as some board subcommittee appointments. For the regional appointments, there are a primary and a secondary. For the subcommittees, they are equal. There's no primary or secondary. They're just two board members that help support staff in their operations. So at this point in time, it's up to the board to determine what the makeup of those committees is going to be moving into 2014.
Okay, let me ask you this question. And this is just, is everybody, the board members, happy with the committees that you're on right now?
On the regional?
Not regional, I think. I don't have it in front of me, actually. Let me go here.
I printed them out for everyone if they'd like to have a copy. If you guys would like to have a copy, pass it in. I've got it on the screen.
Okay, so here it is. I got it right here. Okay, so regional.
Which one do you want to do first?
All right. Well, that's what I'm asking. As far as subcommittees, is there anybody that's unhappy with where they're at on subcommittees?
Can I make just a comment on that?
Yeah.
Because I was relatively new when the placements were made, but of the 24 total slots, I was placed on one. So I certainly would like a little more.
Okay.
Turn on the thing.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's go through.
I would like a little more representation.
Yeah. I also feel the same way. I'm just on one.
No, you're on five.
No.
All together.
Board subcommittee.
Well, I included all of them, top and bottom.
If I can remind the board, make sure we use the mics and push the buttons.
All right. So let's start from the top and we'll go through these. Okay. Contra Costa County Aviation Committee. Kevin's been on that committee for quite some time. I don't see any reason to take you off it.
I have good relationships there. I enjoy meeting with those guys.
Chris, are you as an alternate? Do you care one way or the other? Is somebody else interested in being the alternate on that committee?
Okay, I'll stay alternate.
Okay, so let's leave that one alone. Code enforcement.
I'll be happy to, you know, go off of that if someone else.
Okay, I would like to be on that.
Okay, why don't we move you on to there, we'll take Bill off. There's one. Okay, Contra Costa Special Districts Association.
Mr. President, yeah. Are you going to remain as the alternate on that?
Yes, I will. Unless somebody else wants to be the alternate, they can have it. I'll be glad to do it otherwise. Special districts. Bill, you as the appointed.
Yeah, I can go either way. If somebody else would like, that's fine.
Would anybody like to switch that? All right, we'll leave it alone. Contra Costa Fire Protection. I'd like to see Kevin stay on that.
Thank you. We're in the middle of doing all kinds of stuff over there right now, so it's a little.
Yeah, I'd like to see Kevin stay on
it. So let's leave that one alone. Water Management Association, which is the president, vice president, that stays the way it is. LAFCO Liaison, which is Chris Steele and Bill Pease. We okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Bill?
Yeah.
Okay. P6, Police Services, is Bill and myself. If somebody would like my spot in there, they can have it, or others
I'll be take your spot.
Okay, I'll give that to you, Mary Ann.
Thank you.
Let me change that. So far, nobody's had to get shot. Okay, School District. Chris has been on it for quite a while and has a rapport with the school district.
Yeah, it's.
Kevin's been the alternate. We leave that the way it is? Or
stay the same.
Okay. Regional Transportation Agency. Bill, you've been the primary. Kevin's been the alternate.
I can. If somebody wants that, they can have it. Does it? I don't.
And I'm making the.
Okay. Do you want to stay on as primary?
Yeah, I'll stay on.
Mary Ann, are you looking for another committee?
Yeah, but I'll look down toward the bottom.
Okay.
I want to stay on Park and Rec. So.
You just turn the page upside down. The bottom goes right to the top.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go down to the bottom. The Budget Committee, I definitely want to stay on.
I would like to stay on. I haven't been to a meeting yet.
We haven't had that. It's right. Coming. It's coming. All right. I'd like to leave that one alone. We haven't actually exercised it. Communications Subcommittee, Kevin and Chris.
It exists in name only at this point, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
All
right. Community Center Subcommittee.
I would like to stay on that.
Okay. You're on as the alternate on that.
No, there's no alternate on that. That's member.
Oh, that's it. It's two. It's
those are just two board members.
Exactly. Okay. So. All right. Investment Oversight Subcommittee.
I'm sorry. Before you leave that. Are we leaving the Community Center Subcommittee as is?
It looks like we are.
I'm okay with that.
Are you okay with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Investment Oversight Subcommittee, which is Chris Steele and myself.
Does anybody want my position on that, or Kevin?
Refresh my memory on that. If you guys.
We haven't done it.
The Investment Oversight Subcommittee, if you remember about a year and a half ago, we moved all of our funds from investments into cash because we were paying more in fees than we were earning in the investments because of the low interest, low return. Mm-hmm. So since up until the time that the economy turns around and we have an opportunity to start looking to reinvest our funds, there will be no committee action, if you will. But once that does take place, we would go to the subcommittee and then bring it to the board eventually.
I think we need to have that committee still.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah, we have to have it. All right, so you want to leave that the way it is?
Nobody else means so.
Okay, Marianne, you expressed a desire to be on landscaping?
I'd like to be on landscaping, and I'd like to stay on Park and Rec.
Okay, so why don't we do this? Chris, are you okay coming off landscape, or do you want to stay on it?
If Mary would like, yeah, I don't need it.
Okay, let me, because I'm going to stay on. You're going to go on it with me, Mary Ann, if that's okay with you.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. All right, so we'll take care of that one. Okay, Parks and Recreation. Right now, it's Mary Ann and Kevin. Mary Ann wants to stay on there.
Yes.
I would also like. We have not met yet, but I think it would be good to have somebody that's on both the community center and the Park and Rec subcommittee together. So I'd like to stay on that committee.
Perfect.
The Public Financing Authority, I'm definitely going to stay on that. Kevin, do you want to stay on?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. And then Water and Wastewater Committee.
He's a stay on this.
I'd like to go on that.
Okay, would one of you come off?
I personally don't want to come off. I find that to be one of my primary interests here, and I spend a time out at the plants and making sure that things are being familiarizing myself with what's going on, staying on top of the projects. I really enjoy that.
I'd like to keep it the same.
Right.
Today.
All right, we're going to have to wait till the next committee. All right, so we got through all of them without awards, I won them.
So is water, wastewater remaining as is for the time being?
Yeah.
Okay.
And everything else is agreed upon. Is there anything anybody else saw that they wanted that somebody else has already got? I mean, if I'm on something that somebody else wants, they can certainly step in.
No, I'm happy. Thank you.
Bill, anything?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. So we're agreed.
Good to go.
You have all the changes, Rick?
Yes, we do. At this point in time, it's a presidential appointees with affirmation from the rest of the board, with concurrence of the board.
All right. So we're going to have to ask for a motion to approve the appointments?
You actually wouldn't do it by motion. It's just to take any objections to the appointments as we've just noted them.
Is there any public comment before we do that? There's not. Are there any objections to the appointments we made? There are not.
Seeing none, you have a consensus.
Okay. That was it first. Let's move into, we just finished here. Committee liaison reports, transplan. We have nothing from transplan, county planning, or code enforcement. Any code? No, there was nothing in December, was there? No. Special districts reports? None?
Didn't have a meeting.
Okay, let's move to the consent calendar. Can I get a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
I got a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any public comment? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, now we need to open public hearing and consider the following. Ordinance number 24 to ban the installation of sodium, potassium, and chloride-based water softeners with brine discharge to the town of Discovery-based sewer collection system. At this time, I'd like to open a public hearing. And does this open with public comment, Ron?
No, this will open with a staff report.
Okay, thank you. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you this evening is an ordinance that would restrict the use of water softeners in new construction and also in replacement for a full replacement of an existing water softener. As you know, we continually violate our salt content with the State Regional Water Quality Control Board, and as more and more homes are starting to be built here in Discovery Bay, we felt that it was prudent that after we did our salinity study last year, that we make an effort to at least stem the tide, if you will, and by doing this, that would help alleviate additional intrusion into the system. So Greg Harris is here this evening, and Greg can give you a little bit of a better idea as to the types of the water softeners and what they can be replaced with.
Gregory Harris, Fairwood Engineering. I'm the district engineer. And so we've been fighting salinity issues in town of Discovery Bay actually since the district was formed. We actually started paying fines the first year that we were in existence for salinity violations. Our NPDES permit has changed twice around salinity. Our most recent permit that is now expired, we're working on another permit, but the current permit that we run under right now mandated that we do some salinity investigations and also mandated some pretty scary low limits if, you know, that we didn't get our act together a little bit. But you know, we've done the research. We've researched wells, well water. We've researched the water coming into the treatment plants. We've researched water coming from old Discovery Bay and new Discovery Bay. And we gave a presentation to the board of some of the salinity contents and things that we saw. Salinity is actually measured in two things. The convenient unit is to measure actual conductivity, electrical conductivity of the water. The more salts it has in it, the more electrically conductive it is, and it's a fast test versus a lab test that it takes to measure salinity. And it includes more things besides salt. So when people think salinity, it isn't just salt. It's anything that looks and tastes like a salt or acts like a salt. So potassium is essentially another salt. Bromides and some of these other things are out there. There are salts as well. We did the test on a community in Discovery Bay where we took 66 homes, ran for 2 weeks. We collected all the effluent out of them at one of the pump stations and did tests every daily on the salinity for 2 weeks with all the water softeners on and in place. And then we went in and physically turned off all the water softeners and did it all over again for another 2 weeks and then flipped it back again. What we saw was about a 300-point drop in salinity. Our current limit on salinity is 2,100, and that's for the total effluent in the discharge. And so 300 points, if we could get the whole community to hit 300 points, we actually were over about 100. So if we could get the whole community to hit 300 points, we'd actually be in compliance with our permit. Okay, but we're only going after the newest stuff. You know, like you said, we're trying to stem the tide. You know, we can't correct it all in the town at the moment. So we're trying to stem the tide, and that's what this ordinance is about. And so if you have any questions, I can answer questions.
And one of the questions I have, I mean, we went through this before, and I think we're all pretty, I can't speak for everybody, but I think we're all pretty much in agreement it needs to be done. How would we police this?
It's more about getting the word out to the people that install water softeners. You know, and education. You know, we're not going to be banging on people's doors and asking to see their water softener. You know, it's pretty easy for new construction because they come in for a permit for new construction. And so when we're part of that permit, we say, let us see your water softener, you know, and then we say it's approved or disapproved. So new construction is pretty easy. Retrofit is more about getting the word out to the people that install them that these are the kind of water softeners. In terms of what can they do, there are two prominent solutions to water softening if it's not brine-based. So the brine-based is either salt or potassium. Some people like the flavor of one versus the other. That's why that gets picked. Okay, but if you don't go with the brine-based, you have a membrane. So it's not reverse osmosis, but it's kind of like that. So you have a membrane system, and then you also have carbon-based systems where they absorb it. You know, so there are two different alternatives out there for water softeners. And of course, the town of Discovery Bay paid a lot of money for two water treatment plants to clean up that water so people wouldn't need their water softeners to start with. But there is a history of water softeners out here in Discovery Bay. The town has built these treatment plants to take that issue away for the town's water. But some people still choose to have them. And if they do, those are the two kinds of classes of water softeners they can.
So are you looking at, under new construction, that they would be allowed to use one of these two water softeners,
yes.
But not?
Yeah. They just can't use a brine-based water softener. You know, they can use a carbon-based one or a membrane-based one, yeah. And any replacement as well.
So would, just from my point of view, would we be better off, rather than outlawing water softeners, would we be better off just making it a mandate that this is the only water softener allowed?
Well, there's different technologies coming along. You know, and so I wouldn't want to be so exclusive as to say one's better than the other, or one new system might not come along. The real issue is the brine-based ones are the ones that cause the problems for us. Okay. Other than that, then we don't really have an issue with water softeners. It's we have an issue with the brine that's generated.
Okay. Is there any other questions from the board?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Because I went ahead and I pulled up that report, and I think you were sent a copy of it. It was 234 pages long on that study.
Yeah.
I do not have a water softener, but my question is there conversions possible? Can a person who already has one, can it be converted to be in compliance, or are they have to be literally replaced?
Yeah, water softeners are pretty easily converted. You know, when you say converted, it would really be a replacement.
So it would have to be a replacement.
Yeah, it'd have to be a replacement. So like a brine-based water softener, it has like a salt tank next to the primary, and you put some kind of potassium salt or a sodium salt-based in solution in there, and it doesn't exchange, you know, stuff like that. The other ones are built different, you know. So, you know, they keep the water softener they have till it doesn't work anymore, or they're tired of it or whatever. They can remove it at that point, not use it. They just don't have to use it. Or, you know, if they go to replace it, it'd be a replacement. It would fit physically in the same spot, but it'd be a different unit.
Could it possibly be that in the next pipeline, that could be one of the cover stories?
And I will comment, as you saw in that 238 pages, water softeners have a lot of political action up and down the San Joaquin Valley. And you are not, by any means, the first community to come out and put an ordinance on the type of water softener.
Anything else?
Yeah, it touched on septic tanks as well, so it has the same adverse effect on septic tanks.
Is there any public comment?
Yes,
please,
sir.
Come on up.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Again, name Brian Enbaum, live in Discovery Bay. In 2008, we moved in, we had a water softener in our home, and it was a brine-based system. It was old. I thought, well, you know, there's a better way. So I got on the internet and I started looking. And there's something called Watts. Are you familiar with this one?
Not that specific manufacturer.
Anti-scale water treatment system.
Okay.
And I looked into this. It was not sodium-based. It was not potassium-based. It was a resin. Resin beads went into a tank, and every 5 years you switched it out. All you had to do was put in a carbon filter to make sure you didn't get chlorine in it, because chlorine affected the life of the resin base. It didn't take the calcium out of the water, but what it did do was change it to a crystal, move the calcium through the system, came out the faucet. You got to have the benefits of drinking calcium instead of taking a calcium pill, and everything was good. I had it for 3 years. Spots on the glasses, spots in the shower, build up on everything. So I said, enough. So I went back to a brine-based system, a sodium system. I took my $2,500 water system out, and I put my $1,200 brine system in. After 1 year, the brine system took all the calcium that had deposited in the pipes that they say didn't happen out. Clogged every faucet this last week. Clogged every faucet, every filter. I almost lost my dishwasher because it clogged the water going in. The pump almost burned up. I replaced my water heater 6 months ago, and the only way I got all this calcium out of our pipes in our house was I had to put a hose on the water heater, I had to take cold water into the heater, and I ran it for an hour and a half and pumped everything out of the system, out of the pipes. And when I was done, I had a dishpan mounted full of beads between a 16th and 3/16 of an inch diameter calcium particles that that system left in the pipeline. And the brine system cleaned up. So you may be asking for trouble by changing unless you really know where you're going. And if you don't know this, I'll be happy to give you this information so you can look at it so you know.
Oh, sure, no problem. The good about this information is right back to Mark's question. Should we pick a technology and say use this technology? And the answer is no.
No.
Okay. Because you know, when new technologies come out, you don't always know everything about how it's going to perform. Now I will say, for instance, the carbon-based system just straight absorbs it all. It doesn't try and re-release it, you know. I have heard of resin-based systems. I normally recommend a membrane or a carbon-based system, but the resin-based systems are out there. They work a little bit different, you know, like you said. And it really is, you know, community has to kind of select what alternative works best for them, you know, consumer reviews, consumer reports, you know, things like that. But if you go to Consumer Reports, they have reports on water softeners, and they have models that aren't salt brine based, and you can get consumer information with independent testing. You know, it is, you know, it's a commercial product. People make a lot of claims, and just reading an internet brochure, it doesn't always necessarily tell you everything how it goes.
This system was recommended by the Riverside Fire Department. They said it did a wonderful job. It was all written up, and they ran it for a year and said there was no problems.
Yeah.
And after 1 year, we didn't have any problems. But after 3 years, we did.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Is there any other public comment?
Sir, there's a piece of paper in the bottom.
Exactly.
Yeah, I forgot to picture it. Very bottom.
There you go.
If there's no other public comment, I'm going to close public comment. And at this time, there'll be no other comments, negative or positive. If there is no other comments.
We'll actually close the public hearing at this time.
I will close the public hearing at this time.
Yeah. This information kind of makes me kind of scratch my head a little bit. I'm all in. I realize that we need to do something to be in compliance. And as the engineer has mentioned, there's different types of units that are on the market. This one being one, I certainly wouldn't like to see this type of a system put into a lot of homes, people don't know about it, and all of a sudden, not only is the home affected, but then our own lines are affected. It may pay us to just slow down just a little bit, and maybe ask staff to do a little bit more research and see if there's some additional things that we can offer the public as far as suggestions, instead of just letting them go out there and pick something, and then they end up with a problem that's unannounced. I don't...
At this time, we're just recommending that we ban the installation of this type of a system. We're not making any warranties or recommendations as to what can be substituted in its place.
Well, I understand that, but what I was suggesting is that maybe with some additional research, I'm not sure where or how, but through staff to come up with, you know, we mentioned the membrane, we mentioned the carbon. I don't know how many softener systems are out there.
There's
unintended consequences of a well-intended deed.
I think if you would ask staff, the point of building the water treatment plants is so we wouldn't need water softeners anymore. Sure. So the district's recommendation would be don't install a water softener. Don't spend the money on it.
That would be,
if you were to ask my recommendation, don't buy a water softener. The water is much better now. Now, some people still say it's not up to their standard, and they choose to buy a water softener also. And if you know, I guess we can pull some information together, but I don't think the district wants to be in a position of making recommendations for specific products and models that consumers are going to buy.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. I know we must have the data someplace, a report about the hardness of our water, per se, whatever that level is,
That's in our annual monthly report, right?
Yeah, that's annual report.
In our annual reports, we show that information.
And, well, my question would be, whatever that level, those levels of the different chemicals that are in solution at that time, and if you took a brine-based water softener and you measured the water coming out, even though it has more salt in it, how much benefit has the homeowner received by using that water softener in reducing the other components that, right. The spots on the glasses and all those other things that the homeowners are concerned with.
I think if you looked at like a percent concentration of calcium carbonate or other hard water items, I don't think it's that big a benefit. But there are still people that have taste and odor issues or other things that they might think, sure, your document says, I'm only going to get another 10% if I put a water softener on. But there's other perceived benefits that is easy to quantify, in terms of why someone installs a water softener versus someone that doesn't. Now I do believe in the annual report, we can gather that information and put it in a document. Part of this ordinance, if you read the action, is to implement the ordinance, with the district policies, right? Well, we got to advertise. We got to get this ordinance out there. You don't just pass an ordinance and put it on the shelf and nothing's going to happen, right? So part of that action can be to put together a flyer, and we would have to put together the flyer for the people that install them too. But we envision a flyer for the homeowners, and we can put those kinds of information on there. So we could take the information, the questions that you have that homeowners might want. We can create a flyer, and on that flyer, put some of this information on there, as well as some links or some direction to where they can find installers or where they can find the kinds of systems that they can look at. But there's an informational element to this, because the enforcement on new homes is the builders, right? That's
right.
The new homes, that's the builders. And they have to interact with us, and we approve their plans as they go along. But for the general public and the other people, it's an informational deal.
Well, and I agree with everything you say, and I think our pipeline would be a good avenue to help put that out, plus a direct mail. I'm just concerned about, I don't know how many other types of water softeners that Mr. Imbaum mentioned to us are out there that would cause us more problem down the road.
And right now, I'll just note, Greg's right in terms of the educational perspective of this. So educating about salinity is what you're really trying to hit at with this. And remember that, you know, your hands are a little bit tied associated with what you can legislate against. The reason you can legislate against the brine water softeners is because you have a regional water quality control board saying you need to reduce your salinity.
Right.
The other items that you're thinking of, there's no restriction on those at that point, you know, in terms of creating more deposits or whether the membrane or something creates as new information becomes available. I mean, right, we didn't have a salinity problem some time ago. Now we know about it and what it does to water and what it does to water treatment facilities. So at this point, your hands are a little bit tied, and that's why we focus just on the salinity issue, which is a regional water quality control board issue. And that's why you have the authority to adopt something like this and a ban on the new installation or new homes. You're covering those things that are health and safety and or regulatory issues. So it's difficult to say, gee, let's pick one that would be better and whether or not you have authority for that. So at this point in time, we're focusing just on this, and so that's why we've drafted it in this manner.
Thank you. So at this point, there is no action to be taken other than considering.
No, I think you got to adopt the action.
Yeah, you've got a staff recommendation. One, that the board adopt the ordinance number 24, waive the first reading, establish the brine. I mean, I read it for you, but it's a recommended action there, and you're looking for a motion to that recommended action. You've covered the first part of it, which is open the public hearing, take the public hearing. Now you need to approve the ordinance, and then 30 days after publication of the summary of the ordinance will become effective. And then you'll obviously want to start your protocols with getting some information out to the public.
I need a motion.
Move for staff recommendation.
Need a second.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Okay, new business. Establishment of a community center foundation. Rick?
Thanks. We have three members of the board that are currently sitting or have sat on the Community Center Committee, and the subject of the Community Center Foundation or Community Foundation has come up a number of times. I'm not sure that it's been brought to the board formally for for consideration, but the Community Center Committee has discussed it on enough occasions that I thought that it was appropriate to bring to the board prior to starting the process and the long lead time it takes to establish the foundation, to put it in place. The committee would want to know whether or not the board would be interested in pursuing that before those actions take place. I'm certain that Mary Ann, Kevin, and Chris can certainly comment on that if they would like, but basically whether or not a group of people, if this board would support that type of an organization to help support the community and the community center.
Tell us about the foundation.
Yeah.
You want me to start?
Sure.
Okay.
I did provide a copy of the bylaws that meet the laws of the state of California and the MOU from Brentwood, which really gives us a core base to work with to put this in motion. And moving forward with a foundation or a 501c3, it's going to take at least a year, but we need to get started, and it's going to be a lot of time and effort outside of here. The three of us are more than willing to put in that effort, but we don't want to go through all that work and then the balance of the board say, oh, we didn't want that. So we just kind of wanted we're all for it to move ahead so that in time we can build a base of having volunteers and having an actual foundation similar to the library, one of the Brentwood Senior Center, the various foundations, so that we can have activities happening there under the MOU that foundation would put together, which would take a lot of the work off of the town employees that would be done by this volunteer base.
But can I just clarify one thing? And Marianne's exactly right, but I do want to clarify for the record that when Marianne refers to Chris, Marianne and I discussing this was when we were in a community center committee before Marianne was on the board.
That's
and
correct.
And that this was not discussed outside of any board meeting. And at the time that Marianne became a board member, I have kind of stepped back from that discussion and let Chris and Marianne take the lead on that. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
I didn't cringe over Brad.
No, I just, I did.
It's good.
Okay. I this.
But having said that,
yeah,
I think it would be a benefit to the community. There's no, I can't say that there's no cost, and you'll have to ask staff. Well, we haven't gotten to that point yet to understand what staff's involvement or responsibilities to the foundation would be. That would come under guidance from the board, I guess. Wouldn't it, staff?
Generally speaking, a community foundation, or for example, like a Friends of the Library, or the Friends of the Seniors, or the Friends of the Animals in a community, they will generally form a nonprofit organization to help raise funds to support that cause. In doing so, they will create a board of directors, and the funds that are raised by that 501c3 are specifically identified and can only be spent in that cause. So that would be the benefit that we would see from the community center standpoint. Generally speaking, the boards can be anywhere from relatively small to relatively large. I've seen foundations that have 15, 20 members on the board on a large community foundation, and it's worked very well. Sometimes they can get overly burdensome. And generally speaking, a member of the elected body will be a member of the board, or two members of the elected body will be a member of the board. Sometimes the key staff person that's responsible for that program will be a member of the board, as well as other community members of the board, so that there's input and buy-in from all parties.
And for clarification, the board, this board, would have no say-so with regards to how that monies would be spent, other than maybe being a voting member of the other board. But that those are monies that are raised independent of the Town of Discovery Bay to benefit an asset that's owned by the Town of Discovery Bay, but the monies would not be controlled by staff, nor by other staff. Might get direction to spend the money, but it would be decided upon by that independent board.
An example in a library setting would be that funds are tight and they need to buy more books, and they want to offer more children's programs. The foundation, the Friends, would support that and pay for that. In our case, they could pay for programming improvements, children's activities, senior activities. The list is endless.
Furnishing,
speakers,
whatever it might be. Right.
And it would also enable us to add things like bingo. And that's kind of a 70-page thing as far as the law of the state of California. And it would enable some of those programs to be brought in as well, because that has to be, you're shaking your head again, that has to be a whole separate entity under a 501c3.
I think this is an important piece for the community to have this separation and be able to go and get the donations and the involvement and have a... an opportunity to contribute through a tax-free or a nonprofit. And so I think that's key. And I think it, like Rick said, it's key of that the board work on both boards, so that sometimes, we can get, the resources pointed very specifically. So I think the swim team would benefit as, the aquatic programs, and that may be... those are some big, lofty ideas of what we want to have there someday. And I think this would be a good mechanism to help facilitate those things quicker.
If I may, I think it's a great idea. But I, the only question I really had, if let's say that the foundation decided they wanted to put a certain function into the community center, and that all five members of the board, or four of them, were dead against it, what happens?
It's your property. It's your call.
Yeah.
But you might have some issues with your community foundation, but at the end of the day, it is. But that's where the bylaws and the rules have
to
be.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
You make compensation for who has the higher authority within the bylaws.
But
it gets carefully written by the attorneys to make sure that the control of the asset doesn't leave the hands of the board or the hands of the town.
I mean, I don't foresee it becoming a problem. Obviously, I mean, the things you're talking about doing are wonderful, and they're all community based, and I'm all for it. But I was just curious where it came to.
I will tell you, basically, in your MOU, you clearly define ahead of time what the town will allow the foundation to do. So you may say you can have whatever. You can have bingo. You can have this many luncheons, you can do this many charitable things, you can have a health and wellness fair. You define ahead of time, and then if there's going to be any additions, they have to come before the board for
sure.
Those changes. But they have a set group of what's allowable way ahead of time. That's all part of your MOU. Good.
I think it's a terrific idea.
Where I have some familiarity with these is we see these in rural hospitals or hospitals. You usually have a hospital foundation, yep. And the board of directors is obviously running the hospital. If a foundation has a project that they want to see happen, I happen to work for one right now that the foundation is interested in a community garden. The board isn't nuts about using property for a community garden, and so there's been some debate and back and forth, and so you do see it. But they're usually cordial. They're usually not adversarial. You know, you've got both parties wanting to improve the property and come up with good ideas. There may be reasons why you might not want a particular project, and you'd have to have that discussion. But I think Marion's right. The MOU, the bylaws spell out how they bring it to you, how you consider it, what things that they should be their goals and the orient that they're looking for.
In that case, I think it's a perfect idea. Question?
Yeah, I don't see any major objection. The first thing, when I read this, the first thing that comes to my mind is when we get something off the ground, my first thought is, well, how much staff time is going to take, be it, you know, manager's time or some of the other staff, to kind of help this thing get going? Is that an issue to get it going or not? Or
basically, Chris and I are going to do all of the groundwork to get all of the paperwork and data together. We don't need the staff's help with that. Once we get it defined and we get a legal review of it, then we can move forward. But there really should be very little staff involvement other than somebody being a liaison, possibly the new gentleman who's going to be at the community center. But all of this paperwork has to be done, and again, it's not going to happen overnight. But we just want to have, you know, a positive yes, this is something we'd like you to move forward to. And then once we bring the bylaws and everything to you and you review it, then we can look at changes and ideas and that before it moves forward.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that either. I just wanted to make sure publicly that we're not burdening staff with some additional project to help get it up and going when you've got limited resources there. So
there's no question that we will be involved.
Well, I'd be involved, I agree, but it wouldn't be a task that, gee, by next meeting you're going to have to. I wouldn't want to see that. I wouldn't want to put that. This is a community volunteer program. I mean, board members volunteer all the time. That's super great. Everything's super on that. But if we have that understanding,
I'm willing to do it because that was, you know, my key thing when I came on board was the community center and a volunteer program and the seniors. I'm willing to dedicate the time and effort to it.
I would point out that we will have a full-time staff member that's being hired that's going to be at the community center that although has as many other responsibilities, that there's an additional staff member coming on to deal with issues that have to do with the community center. So I imagine that the involvement of that individual will probably take some weight off the current staff.
If I can make a suggestion that this not be focused singularly on the community center, that it be a major component of it, but community foundations, they're migrating from a singular, like a community center foundation or a recreation foundation, to more of a community foundation. So if they see a need somewhere else in the community for something else, they can go ahead and participate in that as well.
I think for me, I like the idea of knowing that the community center will be used constantly. I mean, what we spent on it to know that there's functions going on a regular basis in there, which will draw more people, and that will draw. And that's really what happens. When somebody has a good time someplace, they tell everybody else that, hey, we went to this
Absolutely.
Thing, we'll start going in. I think it's a great idea. Is there any other comments from the board?
I'll just make one note. You do have to be careful. I mean, in some of the instances you guys are talking about in terms of volunteering time is completely appropriate. You have to be worried about the community service district contributing funds or time or effort, which then otherwise becomes a gift of public funds to this foundation. Some of the foundations you see in the way they start up, because there are some costs and expenses, you know, legal services for drafting the documents obviously aren't free. So you see some foundations where they find a deep pocket that's interested in starting up the foundation, and they make an initial contribution to the foundation to get the foundation kicked off before the foundation's even created. So you might want to consider looking for something like that to get the foundation started.
That'll be Rick.
So at this time, you're just looking for...
Let me ask for public comment. Is there any public comment? There is none. So you're asking for direction at this point?
Just approval, consensus that the board is okay moving forward with this, and I think probably a motion would suffice.
Do we need a motion? I think we all give our input on. There's no action.
Well, if you make a motion on it, then it records.
Rod?
I'm trying to think through a motion here.
Well, for clarification, on your previous statement, if the board decided that it wanted to help fund a nonprofit, could monies be taken out of the budget? Could monies come from the budget of the town, let's say Zone 8 money, to cover the, just as a question, to cover the legal costs, or are you saying that couldn't be done?
I believe it can be. I'd want to do some additional research before I give you a definitive answer, and that's why I'm a little hesitant about a motion here. I'm seeing clear direction. I mean, I think people have got their marching orders. I can do some additional research and figure that out.
So we
that's
take no
within the jurisdiction.
I would take no action.
Let's take no action at this point.
I think it's best to take no action at this point. Let me do some research on it, figure out what the status is. Marianne's going to pull together, do some of the legwork, and volunteer her time to figure those things out. You can contact me directly, and we'll figure it out. I'm advising the board as to what it can and can't do, so that's completely within the jurisdiction of this board to take action towards that. Okay. So let's bring that back after we've got
Marianne, we're out there playing the deep pocket.
Yeah, I mean, it will run us about $1,000 to filing fees and that, which we could probably get from the Lions Club.
All right, let's move on to item two. Consideration, approval, and adoption of resolution number 2014-01 to revise park rules and regulations, forms, and fees for the Town of Discovery Bay, owned and maintained by Parks and Facilities. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As you may recall, back in July of last year, I almost said this year, but in July of last year, the board approved and adopted our current park rules and regulations and policies. Subsequent to that adoption, the community center has opened, and we need to make some changes to accommodate the community center and its uses. Staff has identified a number of changes in the policy that are marked by strikeout, which is being deleted, and underlined, which is being added. And those start on page 43 of 60 of your packet. Kevin, that's probably three or four pages down since you have the paper book. We also needed to make some changes to the fee schedule in order to recognize that there are rental opportunities in there, and the recommended fee schedule is also included as a part of this report and part of the resolution. We do want to return at a later date, probably in the next couple of months. We just wanted to get this to you so that Farron and her staff have the opportunity to go ahead and move forward and have a structure that we can use moving respect to rentals. But we do want to come back at a later date and address some of the swimming pool rentals and the rates there, as well as the birthday party packages and recommended fees. Another thing that we want to bring back is we want to take a look at we have nonprofits listed. We also want to look at what a local nonprofit rate would be. So if it was a nonprofit in Byron or in Brentwood, they might pay a certain rate. But if you have one in Discovery Bay, it may be a lower rate. So we want to be able to look at that and assess that as well. So those will be coming back to you at a later date. In fairness, here to answer any questions that you may have. So this is just really to get us moving since the community center is open and moving forward.
Chris?
I like overall, it looks really good. I've got some questions regarding the fee schedules. I think that I'd like to get some more information on other local venues that offer similar, and I would suggest that maybe these rates could be maybe a sharper pencil and look at how if those rates are really market rate or if we're above market. But other than that, everything else is okay.
So there was a rate comparison done. We pulled the rates from Brentwood, the city of Tracy, and Antioch. We also tried to get information from the local yacht club and was not able to find that in time. Rates varied. The city of Tracy and Brentwood, in fact, also I believe Antioch, besides just what we did, I kind of followed suit with our Parks and Rec guideline of how we do our reservations for our parks. Now, typically across the other cities and agencies we looked at, there were peak times, off-peak times, weekend rates, non-resident rates, resident rates. And so there was a whole worksheet of different rates and different And so they range. There's a huge range of fees for the same room that you'd rent. So for example, the multi-use room or conference room, okay, no, Antioch is flat. So Antioch, it runs from $63 to $74 an hour, depending whether it's peak or non-peak. They don't have special rates for residents, non-residents. It doesn't matter who you are. It's a flat fee, but it does matter whether it's peak or not. The city of Brentwood, for the same, and I'm comparing only to rooms that are of similar size to what we have here. The conference rooms at the community center in Brentwood range from $15 to $46 an hour, depending on peak and who's running it, if it's on or off. City of Tracy is $18 to $68 an hour. So the rates that we put in there were kind of right in the middle of where the other agencies were around us, and lower than their peak hours, but a little bit higher than their off-peak hours, just because I wasn't able to do a full spreadsheet to get this going in time.
I have some questions.
Sure.
Now, you mentioned $15 an hour, but our rate is $45 an hour.
For
so that's
the reception
quite a difference.
Area. So the reception area is a little bit larger, which is the boardroom when you first walk in. The conference rooms, the art room, and the back room, which are smaller and only have a maximum occupancy of 35, are $35 an hour.
But that's still $20 an hour higher than Brentwood.
Well, only Brentwood's is it's only $15 an hour. Again, like I said, their rates range for the same room from 15 to 46. So it's cheaper than their peak rate. It's more expensive than their off-peak rate and resident rate.
Byron United Methodist Church charges 50, not by the hour, but for an evening, because the AA meets over there. And I'm not sure what church, but the Byron Lions Club, they pay $60 for an evening. And I know that they're interested in coming over to the community center, but they're not going to pay more. I just personally think our fees are too high that
sure.
we've listed. Just a personal opinion.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Kevin.
So I see three areas within. Which room is considered the multi-purpose room? The workout room?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just one clarified. Okay.
Yes. The way I looked at this is that we are having a lot of interest already on reservations. I have a number of people who are expecting a call tomorrow with some additional information and hopefully a packet I can move forward with. I believe we should look at this. I believe that this might be a great thing for a community center committee or a recreation committee to look at, compare our new personnel who's coming on staff. But I think it's going to take a little bit more time to actually like delve down and figure out what our peak hours are going to be and kind of get more in line with what other agencies are and what our community is going to need and respond to. So. And I think Rick had mentioned that this is a start to get us by, and that we have no problem coming back and looking at this again.
Two things I'd like to have you look at if you have your pencil handy there.
I do.
Okay. What I have is a page, agenda item. I don't have a page number. When it talks about prohibited activities, Karen?
Which one?
Are you looking at the
second
policy?
Page or third page under policies? It says prohibited activities. It refers mostly to alcohol.
Okay.
When you go down about two-thirds of the way down, it says the district, two-thirds of the way. Alcohol may be consumed without a permit from the ABC when there is no monetary exchange for the beverages or admission charge for the event. That should read food and beverages, because you can't charge them $8 for a burger and give them a free beer. The ABC is not going to buy that. If you charge them for food, they have to have an ABC. They have to have a permit from the ABC. It's not just for beverage. If you're serving a burger and charging them $3, you still and serving beer free, you have to have a permit. It's food and beverage.
Okay.
You might want to check with them, but that's what they told me when I went to go get the permit for our event.
It's a good catch.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the other one other thing, and this is probably, I'm not sure. You have 501c4. C4 is a nonprofit that has membership attached to it. C3 are typically the nonprofits that you
receive. I don't know where you're at. I'm sorry. Same.
Parks and facility rental fee schedule, second page. After the it might Rod, I don't know. Should it be C3 or C4? Or does it make any difference?
Well, they're different. Right
Oh, at the very end, fee schedule page?
The fee schedule. Nonprofit groups shall present a verified and current 501c4. C4 is like...
The Lions Club is C4.
The Lions Club, it charges for membership.
Sure.
C3 is one that is truly a nonprofit and does not charge for membership, but it should...
It should read both.
It should read at least both.
Yes.
Because there's other kinds of nonprofits.
There are other kinds of
nonprofits. So you might want to leave... You might want to just put it... A nonprofit certification or something.
Yeah, if you kept out and current 501c4, you could say nonprofit group shall present verified nonprofit status
there you
at
go.
The time of the reservation.
Right. Then it's not restricted. That's
Do
all
we
I'm trying to say.
Do we want to make that before approval then?
Make that, you can make that change and make that part of the motion.
Sure.
Okay. Any other comments?
And Karen, you can extrapolate that from the tape on Thursday.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not okay with the fee schedule. Are we voting to approve this fee schedule? Because I'm not. I'm going to make an arbitrary recommendation.
Well, my feeling is that, I mean, staff has did some basic homework to try and get them a package to get it going. I understand, too, that the market's going to tell us how much we can charge. I don't think we really know at the moment.
Why don't we charge $10?
Well...
I'd rather see a start on the
because
low side
because it has to support itself.
Well,
yeah,
we've got to get. You can't turn the lights on for $10.
Yeah, I can't even get my staff to go pick up chairs and tables and move them and set them up and take them down and heat the building and.
Yeah, we can't
subsidize this thing.
No,
we need to find a happy medium here.
Well,
we don't want to be the top one, and certainly don't want to be the bottom.
And that's
we
and I think
the market.
Well, I think that's what staff has done. But in order for us to get rolling, we can tweak it, and staff's going to bring us back. Let me ask this question. Once we're kind of up and going and we're renting, we're doing whatever, we're finding resistance here or there, you're going to make some decisions and suggestions. When do you feel that you would bring fees and schedules back to us for a review?
Prior to the opening of the aquatic season, which is Memorial weekend, or late Memorial.
Memorial.
Yeah, Memorial.
So about 90 days?
It would be ahead of that. So probably sometime in April, end of April.
End of April,
beginning of May, so in that time frame.
If we run into a situation where it's obviously not working, and we need to make a change, we're going to come back to make a change because we don't have unilateral authority to change the fee schedule. But we can come back to you every two weeks and make a change if we had to. We don't want to do that, but if we had to make a change. On the fly, we can certainly accommodate that.
But we want to show some consistency also.
Yeah.
We don't want the public coming in 1 month ago, we tried to rent the room, it was $46, now they lowered it to 10, now it's back to 35 again. So, I mean,
That's not what I'm referring to, saying if we run into a situation that is obviously not working out, we'll bring it back to you.
I mean, there are some Lions Club we'll never get, because they get booze and they get food.
No, I'm talking about the Byron Lions.
Oh, they're talking about our Lions here.
No. Okay. Byron Lions. And they're paying $60 where they're at now for the evening, and they are interested in moving over here. Okay. But they're not going to want to pay more.
If it's a big season, I guess.
But, you know, things like that, like where you have long-term rentals, a lot of that stuff would come back to the board. Like, you know, we do that with our park reservations as well. Like when you have organizations who consistently want to rent multiple times, it comes to the board. There's an MOU. They usually get a discounted rate. There's some sort of service back, you know. Those things we've done in our park reservations as well. So, you know, we have card groups who come in, and because we're, using it, marketing it to the community to come in for free, they're not paying anything because it's part of our activity guide. It's a free service to the community. So there are other circumstances where it's not like everybody walks in the door has to pay that fee. It's to reserve it for a special event, you know.
Can there be an asterisk or a line item added to the bottom of the fee schedule that says something along the lines of organizations willing to commit to an annual schedule may receive special consideration or something along those lines? Is that what we're talking about here?
It says long-term rentals for sports organizations or leagues, and so I guess we can add there, we can just put long-term rentals and then just cross out sports organizations and leagues, which is right below the 501c one that you had an issue with. So it's say long-term rentals, fees and other terms would be outlined in a separate memorandum of understanding.
Yeah. That just make that
a blanket
that covers.
It gives you flexibility.
Yeah,
right.
You're not turning somebody away for $5 an evening.
And they can read that. They know that, well, gee, if I ask, maybe I'll get a little discount.
Yeah.
But
right.
You've got to sign up for four days or something.
Well, you got to sign up for like at least a quarter or a half a year or something like
whatever.
That to get that
yeah.
discount.
And you
got to
pay
for
it. Okay.
And you might
okay,
have to
let's move forward with this. Is there any public comment? Is there any public here?
Yes.
There is none. Is there any of the board comment? All right, you're going to need a motion.
Yeah, I move
yes.
staff recommendation.
With the three changes as noted, one
yes.
as to the alcohol, one as to the 501c3, and the third as to the removal of the sports organizations
correct.
And leagues.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, Farron.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
You. But before Farron heads out, because she's going to probably leave right now, I want to take this opportunity to thank her. During this last Christmas season, she was the only employee that didn't get a day off. She worked her tail off getting that place open. And I want to thank you for that. I know the board has all been there in the last week or so. Kevin and I were taking a yoga class last night. You're taking classes. And the place looks phenomenal. You can't believe it's the same building. And I just want to thank
you.
Great
you
hard work.
Thank you.
She did an excellent job.
Thank you. Okay. Item 3, mission statement. Mission, vision, values, and goal statement. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item is a follow-up from our conference in Napa. If you recall, we talked about mission, vision, values, and goals, or individual mission, vision, values, and goals, or a comprehensive statement. In going back after that conference, back in 2007, in September of 2007, the board of directors considered a mission, vision, values, and goals statement. I put in the box in that agenda report the action that was taken at that meeting that actually adopted our current mission, vision, values, and goal statement. So we do have one in place, contrary to my original understanding. So the current mission, vision, values, and goal statement really hasn't necessarily been followed from the standpoint that we haven't that staff hasn't, I'm not sure that the board has, while we follow the general tenets of what it says on a day-to-day basis, we don't really have one that affects who we are today, what we are today, who we are, and what we do. Things have changed since 2007. Significantly, the board has changed, the staff has changed significantly since that time. So what I'd like to do is bring it back to the board at the workshop to discuss a little bit more in depth. But I just wanted to get this to you to let you know that, in fact, we did have one, and there is a handout there for you tonight. It was inadvertently left out the staff report. So Carol went ahead and handed out what our adopted mission, vision, values, and goal statement is. So I just wanted to ask the board what their preference would be for that.
Comments?
Yeah, I think we should bring it back. I mean, these are all nice and lofty, but I think there's too many words on the page to kind of get it in here. You've got to make it nice and easy and simple, and that not only we understand it, but the community can understand it. So I think it's appropriate we bring it up as a discussion in our workshop.
Did we decide on a workshop date?
We talked about it.
We talked about it. Are we on February the 1st?
That's what I
believe.
No, it was February.
I believe.
Kevin had it in his
Kevin had a conflict with your first Saturday of the month.
I can't be there on the 8th.
First.
Yeah,
but you have the date in that you could be there because
the first Saturday is the 1st.
I can be there on the 1st.
Okay.
I think you already stored it in there. See if you did.
Yeah, I had it down. I thought it was a firm date.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to confirm because I know that after that meeting, I did speak with Director Graves and he did mention that he has a potential first of the month.
Yeah, that meeting got moved to the
okay.
8th for some odd reason, and I can't make it anyway, so I because of another commitment.
So it's February the 1st.
So February the 1st is an open date for me.
Okay. February 1st for everybody?
And this is for what?
Canceled golf.
The board workshop, Saturday morning board workshop.
I'll play golf during the workshop.
Yeah.
But what's the, I don't have time on that yet, right? I don't know what the hours are going to be for that, or... Is it all day? Do we know?
I was going to schedule 9 to noon, and
yeah,
if it goes on, if it goes beyond that, it goes beyond that. We'll do what we've done in past years. We'll bring in a fruit tray and some croissants and coffee and go from there.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Agreeable with everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so you don't need anything other than we don't want to take any action on this.
No.
The reason why I wanted to bring it to you is because I was surprised, because I was always under the impression that it had never been approved, had never been adopted by the board. And after the workshop, after the NAPA conference, went back and did the research and found out that indeed it had been. So I just wanted to give the board and the public that knowledge that that had taken place.
Well, which was, I think I remember when they did it, I think it was coming to the meetings. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Ray was president.
Yeah. Item four. Proposed modification to the approved holiday schedule for 2014.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I've been thinking about this for the past couple of years. This past holiday season kind of drove the message home. As you're aware, things kind of come to a grinding halt over the holidays, especially that week between Christmas and New Year's. What ends up taking place is that we end up running a coverage crew. Basically, we divide and conquer. While we always had two managers on here at any one time, it was still a divide and conquer. There might have only been one or two staff members so that they could go ahead and spend time with their family and loved ones over the holidays. Businesses are generally closed that we deal with. Many of them, the contractors, construction companies that we deal with are closed for that week for many of the same reasons. On a regular average work day, we have about 30 to 40 phone calls that come in and about 3 to 6 people that come in on a regular day. When we get the billings out and they have to come in and pay the bills, it's a little bit more, it's more often than that. That doesn't impact this time of the year. This past week, we only had 30 calls over the entire week and 3 people came in. One of them came in at 4 o'clock on New Year's Eve to pay her water bill. So that was, those were the only 3. With our new online bill pay system that we recently rolled out, they can go online, they can pay to a secure server. We resolved all the problems we've had in the past with it, and it's running really, really well right now. The community center, because that would be an essential program, would remain open, and they can, and it would be open for any drop-offs where people have to bring their water bills. So what I'm recommending, if the board would consider, even possibly as a pilot project for 2014, pilot program, would be to eliminate Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is on Monday, January the 20th, Veterans Day, which we would, I'm assuming we're gonna continue to move forward with a veteran ceremony over at Slifer Park, and eliminate one of the 2 floating holidays. In exchange, staff would, and there's always 4 days off between Christmas and New Year's, no matter how you slice and dice it, there's always 4 work days. And what you're doing is you're exchanging productive days, you're exchanging unproductive days for productive days. So we're gonna be off a week from Monday on the 18th, when that's a very productive day. Business is open, things continue. The same thing with the floating holiday and the same thing with Veterans Day. I've talked to the staff about this, and they would like to pursue this if the board is open to it. And so we'd like to see what the board's position is and see if they'd be interested in, at least maybe for this year, trying it out and see what happens.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, double-edged sword. So you're telling me that if you don't have somebody to call and somebody to walk in the door, that it's an unproductive day in this office, nothing happens?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
I didn't think so. Next question. Is it legal for us to require somebody to take their vacation on a particular day? Can we legally require them to do that?
We don't have any bargaining units, and yes, you can do that.
It's a shutdown, right?
Well, no, you're making them take a vacation day.
Yeah.
On a certain day. You don't have any choice.
And
taking away one of their vacation days is basically what you've done.
Well,
you're taking one of their holidays.
It's the same thing as when they ask for their vacation, upper management staff has to say, well, yes, it will
conflict with someone else. You're taking away one of their vacation days that they have control of. And you're taking it out of their control. You're saying you have to take it on this day. If they're okay with that, that's fine. I just want to make sure it's legal.
The theory behind that is that during the time between Christmas and New Year's, everybody will take a vacation
day
at one point or
just,
another.
Like I said,
at least
just
one.
Question.
If you don't have any, then what do you do?
Well, if you don't have any, they don't have any. They would go in arrears for in 8 hours, but that.
Or wouldn't they just take it unpaid?
They can take an unpaid. I'm not a big fan of unpaid, but they can take an unpaid. We have done that
well,
on occasion.
That does bring up an interesting point though, whoever brought that up, is that then your accounting, or you know, each manager needs to keep track of the vacation days that the person used and understand that they have to hold one back.
Our vacation days are tracked very carefully.
I understand
all of our days. Leslie does payroll, and she has it's part of the program.
I got a couple questions here, because if Christmas falls on a Monday, you're saying there's always 4 days off between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, because New Year's is on Monday, so there's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Well, we reopen on Tuesday. We may be off Christmas Eve, which would be a Sunday in that case, but we're back open on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and we are back open on Monday again, which is New Year's Eve. Or, I'm sorry, let's say it falls on a Tuesday. You'd be back open Monday, which is New Year's Eve. So you're given some... Yes, you would. We didn't close New Year's Eve.
Oh, a normal situation.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to me, we're a public entity, a municipality. We serve the public. We would have no crew here. We would be closed while every other business is open. And I don't see that, Rick. I just don't see it. And to me, trading Veterans Day, when everybody's closed and people are not working, we'll be the only ones open with no vendors working and nobody that we can do business with. Because we chose to switch a day.
There are many, many, many municipalities, public agencies that closed during this week, and they've done the exact same thing. They've gone to the employees, and they've said, we would prefer to exchange productive days for unproductive days. Did I say that right? Unproductive days for productive days.
But you're basically giving them a week vacation.
No, they're not. No. You're
taking three of their holidays, and you're giving them the rest of the week off.
Well,
they get the rest of the week off.
To simplify things, what you're asking for is that the office be closed for a week.
Then get Wednesday.
Right? This place will be locked up. Nobody will be...
For 4 days.
Well, plus the day off.
So you want...
For a week. Plus Christmas. Right. So for a week, the office would be closed, whether it's from Wednesday to Wednesday, or Tuesday to Tuesday, or Monday to Friday. There's going to be 5 days in between the two holidays where the lights are off.
There's always four. There are always four work days between
the two holidays. That's clarifying
the
situation.
But again, I'm not disputing that. That's not my dispute. My dispute is if Christmas falls on a Tuesday, you obviously send them home Christmas Eve. We all do that. So they go home on Christmas Eve, and they don't come back until after New Year's.
Right.
They're taking an 8-day vacation.
But what I'm President Simon, what ends up happening is during the course of that week, we end up allowing people to take time off, and so we might only have one or two people here, and you're exchanging really productive day, unproductive. It's an extremely unproductive time of year,
and
a lot.
I'm not disputing that, Rick.
I respect the position that we would be closed, and that might be a disservice to the community.
And I think it is. I mean, I do business. I work those 2 weeks. Let me finish. I work those 2 weeks. And I go into businesses every day between New Year's and Christmas, and they're all open, and they're all open for business. They're not on half schedules. They're not on half. They're there for business. And to me, we still have landscaping. We still have incidents. We still have people that walk in. We still have a phone that rings. And for me to close on Christmas Eve and not open until the day after New Year's again is a heck of a lot more than a 4-day vacation. And I don't see that. I just don't see it.
I have a different point of view. I think I don't have any problem with this suggestion at all. My own personal business, I actually close during those time frames anyway, and everybody realizes we get 10 days off in a row because you got the 2 weekend days.
Yeah, it's, the reality of it's 4 days. Yeah. So the weekends are the weekends. They're going to get those anyway.
Correct.
So you roll them all together, it's a nice time for the holiday. And in defense of my prior comment, the non-productiveness comes from the fact that if Willow is having to file something or to do something on the computer, and Leslie's not here for her to ask that question of how to do it because she's one of the supervisors, you know, or she works under Leslie, then Willow can't get her job done because Leslie has chosen to take vacation. That's the unproductiveness you're talking about.
Or Willow receives 30 to 40 phone calls a day, 3 to 6 to 10 walk-ins, and you have 30 over the course of a week with maybe 1 or 2 or 3 walk-ins. And so the time that she has spent normally dealing with the public is now spent, in many cases, idle, catching
not
up on things, not necessarily doing what she would normally be doing. You do have people that are out, so you have to wait for people to come back in. They are entitled to their vacation that they've earned.
It doesn't cost the district any more dollars and cents for the employees. And I think it's another one of those unwritten things that it's nice to have that time off between Christmas and New Year's to be with your family, and you might want to go out of town. And I just think it's a good deal, and I agree with the non-productiveness of that time frame.
If I can add one more thing, this is for non-essential staff. So for essential staff, for example, the community center would operate under the regular schedule.
And who are they going to go to and have a problem?
Well, managers are still available.
You'll be in Havasu.
No, I won't. We're still available. As a manager, I am always, you know, I'm always available. I know Dean as a manager is available. She lives in town. I live in town. Virgil lives in town. Farron lives in
Dina, where were you between Christmas and New Year's? I believe Lake Tahoe?
Yes.
Yes, you were, and you were in Havasu.
I was in San Diego.
So neither one of you was here.
But I was still able
to... That's not going to change.
But I was still able to...
That's not going to change. But
while I was gone, it wasn't like I was gone. I was on the phone every day with these folks. I was still talking to them. I was talking to Dina. I was discussing with Farron and her project that she was working on. So we're still available. We're still around. Even when you're not around, you're available.
You don't physically have to go to the building to give someone around, but if somebody needs you to be there.
Well, I just have a suggestion on this whole thing is that I don't want to label holidays here and all this. I just want to be specific that we're going to go on light schedule for non-essential between 12/25 and January 1 of every year. And the point of contact for the customer, our customer base, is to go to the community center kiosk, and they can at least accept a payment, or at least key in into a log of action for something. But they'll have we always have a town representative or customer service rep, whatever you want to call them, available at the community center. Is that?
Well, and I would say that if somebody came in to pay their bill and it was going to be late if it wasn't paid on the 28th of December, and they went to the community center, that could be noted, and the person would not be charged a late fee.
Well, even if they came in, if they had a shutoff notice, if we're not here, we're not going to shut it off.
That's
what I'm saying. If they came in and dropped the payment off, or if they paid it online.
My only issue with this is that that I think that if you're going to do this, that for some reason I'm stuck on that mandatory vacation day. I don't like the way that reads, and I would think that you would just want to use the two floating holidays.
Pedro, right?
You're talking about three days.
That you would use the two holidays that you want to convert and the two floating holidays, and then you're using the four holidays at once, and then if they want to take a day off on their birthday, they can just use a vacation day for
it. The option to that would be that the employee has a choice of using it as a floating holiday or a vacation day. That way it would resolve that issue. The employee makes the decisions.
What's the difference between a floating holiday and a vacation day? What's the difference?
The employee would have the ability then, under what you're suggesting, if it was just to take the floating holiday instead of eliminating that, it would be.
But what's the difference? I understand they're two different words, but they're for the same thing. They're for a day off, right?
But the vacation is discretionary to the employee. A floating holiday is discretionary to the employee, but also to the manager and everything. It's potato potato. I understand what you're saying.
I think as long as however the employee wants to do it, they want to use their vacation time or unpaid. Or if there's three floating holidays, let them use it. If they don't want to use it, then. But if we're going to tell them that the floating holidays are going to, we're going to make that a holiday, then we need to just make it a holiday.
If the board is willing to at least try it for a year and see what happens, see how it works out, and reassess it a year from now, I think that would be fine too.
So
that way, it's not locked in place forever.
Second.
Is there any public comment? Any further board discussion? I'll call for the vote.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Pretty soon we'll be closed. We'll open one day a week.
Perfect.
Our
light bill won't go down.
I'm going to apply for a job here for the zoning committee one day. Perfect.
You have to resign from the board then.
Director's comments. Marianne, anything?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Bill?
No.
Kevin?
Yeah, the ECC FPD is seriously considering a benefits assessment again. They've reduced it in half, basically. They've done some research and found the threshold, as they feel, instead of being $198, is $97.
But that still means that no fire department within Discovery Bay. They would not move to back to a 6-station model. They would stay with the 5-station model, and that would not benefit the town of Discovery Bay any more than it already does. And yet we would be paying $97 or more a year in our taxes. I'm not making any recommendations or opinions on that. I'm just stating the fact, and I think that eventually we need to make sure that the district, and they will, there's going to be some education meetings. They're going to be out here, I think, in February. Have they talked to you about that, Rick, yet? February, they're going to have a education meeting here in Discovery Bay where they're going to try to engage the public and let them know what's going on. So just understand that that's coming down the pipeline. Other than that, it was just administrative stuff. Asking the Brentwood to cover they contract with Brentwood for their payroll and some other stuff like that, so it wasn't all that exciting. But that is a big deal, and that is something that they're going to have to start looking at, because we're getting to the sunset of that grant that they received, which is what floated the station staying open.
Kristen?
No, I just great work push there for the community center at the end of the year, and I think we're on track for a pretty fun time there this year.
That looks terrific. General manager's report.
None this evening.
Oh, really? Thank you. Legal?
As always, pleasure to be seen, pleasure to be here.
We like you. Committee updates, community centers, status report, no report, no correspondence, no public records requests, any future agenda items? Hearing none, I will adjourn. Thank you.